welcome to this first edition of Soul Bond Podcast, where we're going to talk about relationships of all kinds and how it interacts with the magic community. Well, you may have recognized my voice. I'm Renee from Higher Standards. I've also appeared on numerous other podcasts. I also am one of the content editors for MTG Bro Deals. With me, I have three other people, only one of which I'm married to, thankfully. And his name is Trevor, so go on.
Hello, this is Trevor, content editor at MTG Bro Deals and the brains behind the community calendar. And the fingers. There's a lot of typing for the calendar.
Yeah.
With us is Sid, who's from Cast from Exile.
Howdy, homies. Sid Meister here, podcast personality from Cast from Exile, casual player, and self-proclaimed limited junkie. Thank you so much for tuning in to this first episode of our Soul Bond cast. And I would like to introduce now my former co-host from American Freak Cast, the lovely and awesome fiance of mine, Bella Muse.
Hi, guys. My name is Bella Muse. I'm a sheep enthusiast. And don't take that the wrong way at all.
Totally the wrong way.
I mean, I play Nexus Ram in Modern.
I'm more like, what's it called? What's the enchantment sheep? Like,
That's Nyx Fleece Ram.
Like, Nyx Fleece Lamb. It's some Nyx Fleece Lamb, and that's what I meant by the enthusiasm. I love to play white in standard. I can play a white weenies deck like no one. And welcome to Soul Bond.
Awesome. So before we get started, we were going to go over our mission statement. Renee was going to tell us about this. What are we trying to do for our listeners here at Soul Bond, Renee?
So our goal is to get a lot of feedback from the community as well as our own input as to how people navigate relationships while also being Magic players. So we're looking at both the side of people like us who where both sides of the relationship play Magic and somehow succeed in the relationship portion, as well as people who, you know, only one partner plays Magic and the other maybe not so much or, you know, has no interest in it. We want to be all inclusive, so, you know, homosexual couples, polyamory, people like us who are married, the whole nine yards, everything is included here. If you have a comment, we will have some contact info at the end of the show where you can send it. And we really want to incorporate this and almost become like Dear Abby of the Magic community when it comes to relationships.
Heck yeah. So speaking of your relationship, why don't you and Trevor give us a quick story about how you guys met and how your romance developed and also how MTG played a part in that?
Well, we met in college. Renee was a year behind me. She got hired at the Commons. Like, we used to do audiovisual stuff. Yeah, let's not go into that. That was fun. But the spring semester, our boss decided that he was going to put us together on every single event in the hopes that we'd get the hint that we were supposed to be going out or something. He was so forward with it that he looked at us one afternoon when we were both sitting in the office waiting for our events to do stuff. And he's like, "Are you doing anything this afternoon?" "No." "Renee, are you doing anything this afternoon?"
"No."
"No." "Cool, you're both done. Go home." "Actually, no, not go home. Go to dinner together. Like right now."
Match made in heaven. So were you guys both in franchise Magic players when you met?
I don't think we were playing at the time casually.
Yeah, we were both in franchise lapsed players.
Like, I've been playing since I was about 13.
I've been playing since Saga.
So, you know, we had both played before and played routinely, but like so many other people, we had dropped out for a little while.
Being poor college students, do that.
And then we found some other people where they were playing Magic just casually, kitchen table, whatever card you have, throw them together. So we started to play with them, got bit by the bug a little bit, but then we moved away. Went to a store looking to get in up to date because Trevor had heard that Return to Ravnica was coming. And it turns out that the day we went, there was a GPT for a event that was a GP that was going to happen like a couple months from then. And as we were going and saying, yeah, no, we're just looking to get into Magic, they're like, well, this is awesome because we need two more people for the sealed GPT. You should play.
Yeah, kind of a steep learning curve to sealed.
Yeah.
especially when you haven't played since before Lorin. Like, I got out in Time Spiral 10th edition because at the time, like, when you're playing casually and you just kind of keep stacking new cards on top of your deck, like, you get to the point where you're like, there's no way they can make Magic better than this. Like, 10th edition Time Spiral was ridiculous in terms of just the level of card quality. Like, I was getting to play, I was playing a blue-white deck with that effectively just waited out until I got to play a Chroma. This was back when the Legend rule was still that you, no, they changed that in Kamigawa. This was right after they changed the Legend rule where you could Doomblade another Legend by playing a Legend.
Oh, yeah?
Because before that, and they changed it for a Chroma, like, you couldn't play another copy of the spell. So, but anyway. So I'd never seen Planeswalkers before. And as you know how it goes when you open a pack for the first time in a long time, it seems like you've saved up your luck or something. So my sealed pool was Liliana, Jace, a Johnny, and Garrick. And I had to pass these because it's a sealed GPT.
Oh, so I would be so salty.
I had to look at four Planeswalkers. In my mind, I'm like, what are these cards? They're ridiculous. And then I had to just wrap them in the deck list and hand them to someone else.
Well, luckily, you might have not known exactly what you were passing at the time, so the salt might have not been so real.
It was pretty real.
It was pretty real.
But yeah, so that's how we got started playing back, and I've been playing competitively since then. I don't quite have the, like, super pro tour aspiration that some people do, but I want to at least do well. And then Trevor started judging this year.
Last year.
September. Yeah, okay, so it's...
Oh, well, congratulations on that, sir.
And since then, every weekend has been at an event where he's judging and I'm playing.
Pretty much.
So yeah, that's kind of where we're at and what we do. We currently live in Delaware and play a lot in Philadelphia. Between Philadelphia and Boston is where we play the most. So what about you guys?
As far as my MTG story goes, I started playing way back in the day, maybe about 1996. I want to say the newest set that had come out was possibly Tempest. I only played for a short time in the 90s, maybe for about a year or so. Kind of got out of it when, you know, I hit puberty and got interested in girls and stuff like that. I got back into the game when I was, I want to say, about 25 years old. Innistrad had first come out, and I was living in San Antonio, working at this snow cone shop, and, you know, I'd been playing competitively up until this point. I'd kind of moved really quick from the kitchen table to the competitive scene just because of the people that I was meeting, like, at drafts and stuff at my local game store. And, yeah, I was working at the Snow Cone Shack, and one hot, balmy May day, this beautiful angel comes up to my window asking me for water, and we kind of hit it off and started talking and slowly became friends, and I introduced her to MTG, and that is Bella, who we're talking to. Do you want to take it from here, Bella?
Yeah, of course. So, like, it was just a hot day. I went ahead and I really needed some water. I came back the next day because I was like, hey, I want to see, like, what they have, because it was a snow cone shop. And I got offered a job by the owner. I was like, oh, okay. So I went ahead, and so this is where my MTG experience starts because, well, Sid, you play a lot of MTG. Like, that was the time period I was just like, man, like, wow. And it was, like, the first, like, I guess, experience, because I've never heard of MTG before. Like, I probably played some Yu-Gi-Oh! Like, when it first came out. Like, I've watched all the shows and everything, but I heard nothing about MTG. And it was a fun experience. We started with, I think, Avacyn Restored, and we played a lot of Nicobolas versus Ajani. Like, so many. And it was just so much fun. No, there is one part, like, when he kind of, like, put his, like, first move on me while we were in the movie theater, where he just kind of went ahead and took my hand, and I was, it was really awkward. It was not comfortable. I felt like it was, like, I wanted to just, like, cut off my own hand and run away. And then after the movie, like, I had just, like, kind of, like, waited it out, like, to see how long he would do it. And then as soon as we got out of the movie theater, I was like, don't you ever do that again. It was awful. It was so awful. Ever since then, like, I've been playing a lot of Magic, and there's a point in our life, like, where we had, like, gotten into a bit of, like, a rough patch where I did something admittedly stupid, and, well, we just shared such a great love of Magic that we kept having to go in, like, the same game shop, and we would just keep seeing each other, and when you just keep seeing each other, you just keep having those feelings just kind of, like, resurface. And it kind of went out that we worked everything out. And Magic just kind of became a part of it. It was the reason, like, we could, like, be now as fiancés. And it's just exciting.
And the story is far from over as far as MTG is concerned. You know, her and I still play Magic every chance we can get, be it actually physically playing cards. We also do some other stuff. I guess we'll get into that later about ways we enjoy the game together. But I think the whole MTG and our relationship is really going to culminate at GP Vegas this year when Sandy Bell and I get married.
Hooray! Yay!
So,
I'm gonna wear a blue dress.
Yeah, we are so looking forward to that. And that's our Magic story so far. And of
it's
course,
only
podcasting.
Have Liliana officiate the marriage.
That'd be cool.
We haven't decided a venue yet. So, you know, if they have something like that available, we're definitely going to jump
you
on it.
You just got to find somebody to cosplay.
Sure.
I know, right?
I mean, I'm sure Sprankle will be there.
Well, but is Sprank an ordained minister? That's the question.
You can do it online now.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna tweet Sprank about that. See if she wants to do it. That might be cool.
I mean, she can, if nothing else, at least say the lines, and the priest is standing there, looking nervous.
So, I guess podcasting is also a big part of the way I play MTG. MTG content has become over half of the game for me at this point. When I started doing a podcast for MTG, that's me and my boys, Cast from Exile, Bella and I had started doing a fan cast together called American Freak Cast. It was coinciding with the American Horror Story Freak Show that was just recently on. And yeah. Every episode, we would do an episode, and podcasting together has also become an integral part of our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, content-wise, I feel like occasionally that's all we do now. Because we work with Jack over at MTG Bro Deals and organize a schedule for each week and edit somewhere between 5 to 6 articles, plus write, plus podcast, plus the calendar. Plus,
you can't see it, but I'm nodding with like that that resigned like,
what has my life become? And Higher Standards, of course, and then appearing sometimes with you guys on Cast and just everywhere. I feel like we don't stop anymore.
Yeah, also, you know, another big thing that I think is important to touch on here is that we were all kind of enfranchised gamers. You know, Bella obviously had never heard of MTG till she met me, but she was already an enfranchised gamer when I met her. So that made it really easy to try to get her interested in MTG. Unfortunately, you know, I don't want to say there's no hope, but if we have listeners that are listening, like hoping that they can get their significant other to play MTG, you're probably going to want them to be like an enfranchised gamer before you propose that to them, because MTG is a very steep learning curve as far as, you know, other games go. Like, it's really easy to teach somebody that's never played a game before how to play Rummy, but if they aren't already, you know, strategy minded or gamer minded, it would be really a stretch to get them like competent with MTG.
And I think in the future we'll go over games that we feel we can recommend to couples who aren't necessarily, where one person isn't a super gamer like we were, that we've used to introduce other friends to MTG and just gaming in general. Like Trevor and I, our first date consisted of pizza and BioShock.
Yes.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, we're definitely a little different than I feel the majority.
But... Let me ask you, after playing BioShock, are you apprehensive now when people say, "Would you kindly?" You're like, "What are you trying to do to me?"
No.
It crosses my mind.
Yeah, same here. I'm just like, don't say it like that.
Trevor has a much more vivid imagination.
It comes from being a writer.
Yeah. So, I mean, that'll definitely be something we want to cover in the future, and maybe a couple times as newer games come out, even.
Mm-hmm.
So, this week, in addition to the introductions, we wanted to talk something kind of low-key, just to get everyone in, to understand our perspectives and our personalities as far as the game goes. And we thought something that would be fun was to talk about the more Vorthos couples in Magic that we see throughout the story and the card art and all that kind of stuff. So, Bella, do you want to start with what couple you really enjoy, or, you know, even a couple that you would want to see together?
Yeah, of course. I wanted to go ahead and talk about the artifact for three, that's 06, Guardians of Metis?
Meletus. Yeah.
Meletus. I'm so sorry. I can't pronounce things to save my life. But anyway,
it's all right.
They are actually a couple of homosexuals that, because of their love, started war and broke peace in the land.
Now, they were dudes, right?
Yeah, they are dudes.
Seems like in Theros, you know, there's a lot of old backwards thinking, but here at... here at Soulbond Podcast, there's no controversy. If you're with your dude snuggled up right now, listen to this, and you're a dude, getting more power to you. And
if you're a chick with another chick, like Liliana and Chandra, more power to you.
Oh my God! So you're talking about the Liliana and Chandra playmat? That is infamous.
So there's a matching one for
Sorin and Jace.
Sorin and Jace.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Oh man, can you imagine? Like, that's gotta be the most awkward relationship.
Mind bending and vampire.
I mean, I guess.
But both brooding, you know.
Brood?
Yeah.
Who broods harder? my cape's cooler? I've got a sword?
No, my cape is cooler.
But yeah, no, with the Guardians of Meletus, I think it's really interesting because, there are historical accounts from Greek culture that...
Leaders of city-states.
Yeah, leaders of city-states, while they would be married to a woman, it was completely acceptable for them to have a man on the side, both in Greek and Roman culture.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah, so I thought that was a really cool tie-in to, I guess you could say,
the real world.
Yeah, the real world inspiration for Theros.
There's a lot of romance in Theros, though. I mean, you have... I guess Purphoros and Nylia, they kind of got hot and heavy a little bit. If you read the flavor text of, I want to say it's
the unicorn.
It's Opaline Unicorn, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, well, let's see.
It is a very traditionally romantic setting. Like, it's very idyllic and very pretty. And
yeah.
And then we also have Axemaid and Cyanide.
Or Anax and Cymeade if you're not Bella. No, this is awesome though, because I know that this is going to be like part of the show going forward, is Bella mispronouncing things. It may even get its own meme one of these days, so you know, we're looking forward to that. Plus Marcel does it all the time and everybody loves him, so
But, yeah, I mean, and then we haven't seen that many relationships in cons besides Narset and Sarkon.
Whoa, Narset and Sarkon were knocking the boots?
What? Yeah.
Well,
I mean, not quite. They're
he
getting
was
there.
Hoping for it. Like,
there was a lot of pining.
Like, I'm really hoping that the rest of Sarkin's plot is not now wandering the multiverse looking for Narset. Like, I hope they tie that up. Because it will get really, morose if Sarkon is, just... Sarkon showed up in this block. I miss Narset!
But at the same time, Narset is not in the refrigerator.
No, she's not. But she's off having her own adventures with Tamiya.
And that's fine. Like, that's, you know... Well, those enlightened people have to stick together.
I mean, because they both love exploring. It's what they do. Like, all of the, just about all of the blue Planeswalker ladies are all explorers.
Yeah, I know for sure that Tamiyo, you know, was kind of staying put when she was in Innistrad because she had found Jalin, I guess is what his name is, or Jelnek. They never made a card for him, which really bugged me, but he's a moon sage on Innistrad. He's not a Sora Tami per se, but he does realize that their moon has like some very powerful magic going on with it, and it's not like, you know, moons on other planes. I'm not sure if he's aware of other planes. That's an interesting question. So if you're a planeswalker and you find yourself romantically involved with someone whose spark is not ignited, like, do you tell them about your planeswalking life? Like, how do you explain, you know, being gone and unable to be found for like days, months, years at a time?
I guess it would just be that you have to be completely honest with this person. I mean, like, I think it'd be really cool. This person would be like, wow, all the cool worlds. And since you're a planeswalker, you can bring all kinds of cool things. Like, you can bring like different types of like pets and magical items. And I don't know. I think it'd be cool.
Yeah.
But of course, it would kind of suck because, you know, it'd be kind of sort of like a long distance relationship. And, like, you know, it kind of can put a lot of stress. So I don't really know how to answer that question other than to be truthful.
I mean, they sort of touch on this with Dak. But, I mean, Dak is what's the word I'm looking for?
I'm not sure.
Playboy.
Yeah.
He's red-handed.
Dak is into getting whoever he
international
wants.
International millionaire and playboy.
Dak is... we also go into it with Elspeth and Daxos a little tiny bit.
I don't think it ever occurred to either of them that she would have to leave eventually. But, I mean, also, Elspeth wanted... Like, Elspeth's whole reason for coming to Theros was to effectively retire.
Yeah, like, she's, like, the only planeswalker ever that's all, like... I'm actually not trying to planeswalk. I'm just trying to find a place to live that isn't totally screwed up and overrun with Phyrexians or Eldrazi or, you know, Fibblefips, you know, just like somewhere nice and peaceful.
Somewhere where I can rest. But unfortunately, that didn't turn out so well for her because the gods here just decided that she was too powerful after they gave her the one weapon to kill a god. And, yeah, now she's hanging out with Erebos.
Well, I think gods are just planeswalker phobic in general because of what Xenagos did.
Well, and I mean, there's a fan theory going around right now that Gideon ignited his spark because he killed the original red-green god. Because Gideon's spark ignited when he defeated an opponent that he didn't think he could defeat.
Oh, yeah.
He was so staggered by winning the fight.
Good question.
Then he planeswalked away.
So this is confirmed that Gideon is native to Theros?
Yes, it has been confirmed. It was in the one of the screenshots for duels.
That is interesting.
That's great. Now, the only question is, who was the original red-green god?
That is a good question.
The way that gods work on Theros, once no one believes in them anymore, they just vanish. And I'm not just talking about, like, no longer exist. Like, they vanish from history. They just cease to have ever existed.
Oh. Okay, but that's not my question. My question is, if Gideon killed this red-green god, who was this?
That's what I'm saying. They don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
The reason it's called Temple of Abandon is that it was abandoned.
But there's still people there.
Well, satyrs.
Oh, yes, yeah. But it's spiritually been abandoned. Like, there isn't a god there anymore?
So, satyrs are like the hobos of the multiverse, you know? They just go wherever there's good grub and party, you know?
Yeah, it's actually not incorrect.
but, yeah, like, I don't know if we'll find out who that green god is, because he's been erased from history.
Like, he doesn't exist anymore. Like, even Krufix would not know.
So, Plains walking away from Theros, a relationship that I think would be really cool just because of the adversity that they'd have to overcome, Fibblethip and Vraska. So on one hand, you have Vraska, who is a Gorgon that whenever a mortal looks upon her is turned to stone. And on the other hand, you have Fibblethip, who is, what's the exact number there, Trevor?
I think it was 67%.
He is 67%.
I think it was 20%.
No, it's way more than 20% I. He's got to be at least, 45% I, if not more. But if they can find a way to overcome this and let their romance endure, I mean, that's beautiful, man. That's like epic beautiful.
They just wear blindfolds all the time.
So who do you think Domri Raid is shacking up with? You know, he's a young guy. That,
he's just a kid. Yeah, he's 13.
Well, I mean, on Adventure Time, you know, Finn's only 13 and he's had, you know, love interests. So when I say shacking up, I don't mean they necessarily got to be like doing the dirty, but they could be doing some heavy petting or something, you know.
I know
who I would go after if I was Domri Raid? That Burning Tree emissary. She is a fine lady.
She is, and she has like that crow skeleton on her head.
Heck yeah.
She's tough.
I ain't scared, dude. Have you noticed that, like, all the girls in Gruul are, like, super hot, and then all the guys are, like, either freakish-looking or they're just monsters?
I actually never got that, because all of the women in Gruul were very, like, petite and slender for being these supposed warrior women.
Because Rebel Belt Raiders is, like...
Lith, like... super tiny. And then the dudes are like these huge monsters, and it's like, where is the middle ground?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Well, I think all the fat people are in Black Align guilds. I don't know why. Like, every time you see a fat guy, he's either in Rakdos or Orzhov, so...
Well, that comes in large part to a foible in fantasy storytelling, which fat people are always evil, because fat people are...
Even Santa?
Because to have been
so Santa is evil?
Setting, you had to be wealthy and powerful.
Well, sure, maybe in like a fantasy setting like Zendikar, where like the land is wild or whatever, but like, you know, Ravnica is metropolitan, even though they have like high fantasy things. Like, I would imagine that the day-to-day quality life in Ravnica is much like that on Earth. So,
well, I mean, what he's talking about is story-wise, like, it is a fantasy almost trope.
Oh, okay.
For fat to equate to evil.
I mean, that kind of sucks. Like, what about, like, if we were to go into, like, statues of Buddha, like, that's not necessarily considered evil.
But
that's considered,
Eastern,
like,
that's
enlightened.
That's an Eastern mindset versus a Western mindset.
Yeah, but in fantasy, like, they use a lot of cultural references, not only in our, you know, Western society, but from different places.
Which, fat people, there aren't very many, quote-unquote, fat people in cons.
Yeah, like, none of the Jeskai are Buddha-sized monks, except the Jin, and they're non-humans.
And, same with Kamigawa. Like, there aren't very many, everyone's very slender and built and... You know, this perfection view of humanism versus the more Western pulled ideas like Lorwyn, Ravnica.
Even then, there's not... But that's okay. Like, we're not talking about
that.
No,
we're not.
That's not what we're here to talk about.
But we'll plans walk away from Ravnica. Who else has some Vorthos couples in MTG they wanted to discuss?
Gideon and Chandra?
Now, is that confirmed or is that speculation?
It's hard to say now, because it seems like, since they've decided that Gideon's from Theros, that they may actually just be undoing all of Purifying Fire. Because Gideon was originally created by the author of Purifying Fire purely for use in the book. And then they were like, yeah, you know what we're going to do? We're going to have Gideon on Zendikar.
Well, he's a good property. I think, you know, Ajani, even though all of his cards are really cool, I think just like the kind of... The animal look of him doesn't go over, like, super well with everybody, you know? He kind of seems, like, dorky to some people, I'm sure. So it was a good property just for another white, like, male planeswalker to pick up Gideon, because he's just, like, you know, the kind of high fantasy, you know, superhero type dude.
Gideon is sort of in the same vein as Garrick, except you're not worried about hanging out with him.
True. So
Garrick is who you want to go have beers with. Gideon is who you want to go to a baseball game with.
Correct.
Fair enough. Since we mentioned it earlier, which Planeswalker homo couple is preferred? Do we like the Soren and Jace, or do we like the Liliana and Chandra? I want to say, for one, I don't think the personalities of Liliana and Chandra are, like, working out too well together.
They're both too hot-headed.
Yeah, that's true. They'll probably kill each other on sight.
Yeah, it's weird that even though they're allied colored planeswalkers, I could never, like, imagine those guys joining forces. And even then, it's like Gideon and Chandra are... you know, enemy colored planeswalkers, and they seem to get along kind of decently. So I don't know, maybe mana color doesn't necessarily have to influence who you play friends with.
I feel true. Like Karn and Ugin need to hang out more.
No, so Karn and Sarkon need to have a conversation, because now Karn is not the only person who can travel through time or has traveled through time.
Freak, I hate time travel stories. I mentioned this on a recent episode of Higher Standards, but Mr. Peabody and Sherman have ruined me for time travel. I hate it so much. Like, I wish they had just made more episodes of Dudley Do-Right, you know?
Yeah, and he says that every single time. Every single time we watch cartoons of the 1950s kind.
Yeah, I mean, I always like the pairing non-Planeswalker of Gerard and Fawn from... Ravnica as well.
But, I wasn't playing back then, nor am I familiar with this storyline. Enlighten me.
So, Gerard and Fawn met in the original Ravnica block and hit it off real well, even though they had some rocky points because she's Celestnia and he is Golgari. And they... Savra?
Savra, yes. Savra.
Gerard's sister, who was the leader of the Golgari, so that the rest of Ravnica wouldn't all die, pretty much, because Savra was kind of crazy. And they decided to get married, and they had a kid, and then sadly, the kid died.
This is a tragic tale.
It is kind of tragic, and I wish that we could get...
And Gerard died to make sure that their kid would survive, and then their kid dies anyway.
And then Gerard comes back as a zombie, and nobody wants to hang out with a zombie, apparently.
I mean, Liliana does.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a couple. No.
Ravnica is quickly becoming the crossroads of the multiverse, and I think they're doing that on purpose, because it allows them to touch on all the color pairs without necessarily having to leave anybody out.
Yeah. How about this, guys? Weigh in on this. Liliana and Garouk, should they just screw and get it over with already?
No.
It's heavily implied that already happened.
It already happened?
And it didn't solve anything.
This is news to me. This is news to me.
It's somewhat implied in the comics.
That really sucks. That must mean that the Chain Veil is just a big hoax, and really, Liliana and Garouk's recent affliction as of late may be due to some unprotected loving.
He got his syphilis?
No, she definitely cursed him. She was like, no, please leave me alone now, okay, thanks.
But there's no way the Chain Veil could be that powerful. I mean, have you seen that card? It's awful.
It is awful. I don't... I mean, Godslayer was at least interesting, and it was only a rare. They print a mythic that does nothing.
They screwed up.
Hey, I think it might be pretty good with Death Shadow. It's a guaranteed, you know, lose two life every turn. So
I'd rather just play Watery Graves.
Right.
I feel like a couple that could get some traction would be Nissa and Liliana. Because Nissa's animating zombies, Liliana's animating zombies, and Nissa's animating lands, and they could just take over.
I feel like that would be a very Fifty Shades of Grey relationship. Liliana would just make Nissa do terrible things.
I think Nissa's got some spine.
Yeah, I don't think Nissa's the type that's going to get the what for in the bedroom, man. I don't know. Maybe.
I'm not saying
maybe...
in the bedroom. I think Liliana would make would do terrible things to Nissa.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Oh, it'd like, be more of an abusive relationship.
And go and take over entire planes.
Yes. Like,
I think
like...
Liliana is just undateable. So, I mean, like, it's just like no good can come of that, I think.
Well, I mean, and I think that her position as such really speaks to the fact that she is the titular black mage. Like, she cares about her, and that's it. And that's what black does. It cares about it, and that's it.
Yeah, come to think of it, there aren't too many other just, like, solid black planeswalkers. I mean, Soren had had a moment where he was solid black, but even then, it was weird because he, you know, combined forces with Nissa to try to battle the Eldrazi.
Right.
So,
Soren's always been black-white, to be honest.
But they just wanted to make that mono-black Soren just so they could have another mono-black planeswalker, or...
I think that they wanted to rest Liliana before they printed Vale. So they knew that Soren was going to be the planeswalker for Corset, and they try not to have multicolored cards in the Corset.
Fair enough. I guess Nicol Bolas is the only... Or I guess Garup got his multicolored planeswalker card too, but... Nicol Bolas, man. He was the only three-colored planeswalker for a while there, and now we got us a brand spanking new one.
Like, we were talking about this the other day with black planeswalkers and how they haven't gotten very many into solid black. They have Liliana.
And that's it.
And Soren.
And that's it. Everything
and even then, like...
Flash.
Liliana's been trying to find her identity as, like, what does a black planeswalker do? I think that's, like, a design space that they're still trying to look into heavily, because if you look at every iteration of Liliana, they're all doing, like, really way different things.
Well,
and
Dark Realms was a very significant departure, but I don't feel like Vess and Vale and the new one from Origins are all that different.
They all make you discard.
And they all look for things, and then they all reanimate stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I could see where you're coming from there. The Dark Realms was definitely like an out of left field kind of thing. I liked that card. I thought it was very powerful and didn't see as much play as it should have. But
it could have
been
a new Planeswalker instead of Liliana.
There's so much stuff that black does that I guess it's really hard to kind of put it into just like a planeswalker card and just be like, yeah, this feels like what a black planeswalker should feel like, you know?
I mean, the thing is black does everything at a cost.
It does, except killing enchantments. It never does that.
Like, I would like to see a black planeswalker that has some sort of drain ability.
Omnixilis has a drain ability.
Yeah. But I would really like to see that in something standard playable, so I compare it with Palace Siege and just say, nope, I take all your life.
Didn't Soren Markov kind of drain, but he did damage, right? Because you could redirect it to other planeswalkers, but that was kind of his thing.
Soren could punch creatures and players and planeswalkers.
Yeah.
And
yeah, they had to make it damage and not life loss because, you know, if he can't even fight another planeswalker, he's not that great.
But I think overall Magic has a lot of really good relationships that are very representative, or at least it's getting to be that way.
And I think that the groundwork they're laying with finishing up the story with because really, like, with the end of Theros, we sort of resolved Ajani and Elspeth's stories. Like, what started on Bant in Alara is now somewhat resolved. And so we're getting a new group to follow because we're bringing in Gideon, and it'll be interesting to see how the new cast in this new act bounces off each other.
So this is maybe a little off topic of what we're talking about, but you did mention that there was that set of planeswalkers that we were looking at before, and Koth was part of that. What was the resolution in Koth's story? Is he dead now, or?
We don't know.
The only resolution we have in terms of what happened on New Phyrexia is battle report. And the word there was complete annihilation.
Mm-hmm.
But they released a UR shortly after where Koth held off the Phyrexians until Elspeth Plains walked away and then set off a spell bomb and disappeared. Koth is probably still alive, still fighting the good fight.
Tezzeret disappeared on New Phyrexia too, so I mean, it's very possible that Koth and Tezzeret may tie it together in future storylines.
No, there was another UR where Bolas pretty much shows up, plucks Tezzeret out of New Phyrexia because Tezzeret was believing himself to be king of the machines now. Look at me, I've got all these machines that listen to me, and I can't be corrupted because I'm a planeswalker, so I love being here. And Bolas was like, no, you belong to me. You understand that, right?
Bolas has always got to be owning somebody. He would be the worst boyfriend planeswalker by far, I'm sure.
Oh, I mean,
on top of the dragon claws.
He does like to kill all of his rivals. So if you talk to somebody, he'd just kill them.
Yeah. No, Gwen.
It could be handy, but I feel like that.
But,
that
like,
is not
you can't.
Relationship.
It's not. Like, you can't. I mean, there's a certain point. You have to have certain time away from Nicobolas, and I think he'd be pretty possessive of whoever he chose to be, like, his significant other.
I definitely think that this is something that we can go into at a later episode as to...
Especially when Bolas shows back up.
...qualities, relationship-wise, of which...
Are you speculating that we're going to see a Nicobolas romance story one of these days?
No.
Maybe.
I'm willing to speculate on that because it's just that ridiculous.
I think if we're going to see any characters' romantic arcs in Magic, I think we'll see Chandra Gideon.
I wouldn't mind seeing that. You know, those are two of my favorites. So,
because Jace Liliana already happened. It happened all off-panel.
Yeah, and like all Liliana relationships, she ended up screwing them over somehow.
In their relationship, I don't think she meant it to happen, because it was very early in Liliana's career as a terrible person.
Right.
Because she saves Jace.
Yeah. That's, I mean, there is so much Vorthos we can go into, and we really hope that, like, anybody that is still listening... This is not like we're actually going to talk about mechanical stuff in the game, but we thought this would be like a good fun like discussion just to jump off from, because it was supposed to be quick, but we got pretty in depth here today. So I think we're getting ready to wrap it up. But before we go, we wanted to touch on ways that we enjoy MTG together as a couple. So Trevor and Renee, tell us a couple of ways that you guys enjoy your MTG together.
I like making his life total zero.
She does do that, and I enjoy resolving thieves auctions and taking a dollar from permanent.
Wow, you really are a judge.
And I've already told him and announced to the world that the moment he resolves Clone Legion against me, there's going to be some divorce papers the next day.
Oh, ow.
I'm only making copies of 50 creatures.
This is how you fight this metagame and save your marriage, Renee. You got to start playing creatureless decks. I have a Magus God of Slaughter list that you'll probably like. It's very painful.
I don't even know how to play creatureless. I try and play control, and I'm like, where is my creature?
What am I doing? How do I win?
Where is my big green guy?
You win by playing the cards that say kill all the creatures, and you not having any creatures out. It's pretty easy, actually.
Keep getting two to the face.
Yeah.
But, you know, we also do Two-Headed Giant together with pre-releases and at large events where they have Two-Headed Giant available.
Two-Headed Giant is the ultimate test of a relationship.
It is. Which we'll get into at another episode as well, I think.
Yes, there will be a whole Two-Headed Giant episode for sure, because I do love me some Two-Headed Giant. And me and Sandy Bell actually have kind of an awkward Two-Headed Giant story of things not to do when you're in a relationship and want to play Two-Headed Giant.
That would be good for that episode. What else do? We test a lot.
I take it you guys test standard mostly, since you're Miss Higher Standards.
Yeah, a lot of standard. Occasionally he'll hand me a modern proxy deck so he can test his modern decks. Legacy, not so much, because all the decks I want to play have $350 lands in them.
Because she's green. She's a green mage. She wants to just play four Cradles.
Yeah, why not? Cradle's a fun card.
Well, let me just get the money for that. But we do kind of just about everything together with Magic. If it's available to play, we play it. And we sort. We do a lot of sorting. But I can actually
sorting
see
is fun.
Desk today. Like, there's actually a desk there. It's kind of amazing.
Well, I put the tokens away.
But what about you guys?
Okay, so the way we play Magic together, we usually like to play the dual decks. Almost every single time the dual deck has come out, we go ahead and get them, and we just get a lot of hours of game. Go to the shop, and we'll play standard tournaments, and we usually will play separately, so in case if I want to go ahead and like play Commander, I get to play Commander with a group of people, and he gets to play in a standard or modern tournament, whichever he chooses. And then we also like to play Commander together. I have a Derevi deck, he has a Mogus deck, he also has a Tauren deck, and it's quite an interesting game because I play, like, I just like putting creatures on board and seeing what happens.
Now, keep in mind, we play a lot of two-player Commander, and Derevi is banned in two-player Commander, but this is how we make compromises for the people we love, okay?
And I just don't play it correctly, so yeah. Also, we like to go ahead and make our own booze set. So what we do is we go ahead, we make Magic cards. Like, it's not official Magic cards. We're not, like, selling them or anything. We just do them to, like, play at our own house. And we have actually have Magic Set Editor where we're making a Fractured Fairy Tales set.
Yeah, it's very much so in the vein of kind of Lorwyn meets Ravnica, where there's a lot of two color cards, and it's very two color centric, but it's also very tribal centric. So we have a tribe that corresponds with each of the 10 colors. You know, it's not obviously not the most original idea, but it does make for a lot of really cool discussions and has really brought like a new dimension to the way that we play the game. Another thing that's great about my lovely Sandy Bell is I have never had to just open a booster pack to see what the rare is, because I always have, if I have two packs, I always have somebody to pack war it with. I feel like as a limited player, that's the best way for me to get value, because some booster packs, when you play pack war, it somewhat resembles like a limited format. You get a good idea for how the commons and uncommons play together and against each other. And we get a lot of value. I'm a big advocate for, you know, don't tear open your box of booster packs just to see what your rares are, because more than half the time you're going to be like, oh, this box was crap. You know, I didn't get any fetch lands. My mythic was, what is it, Clone Legion? Oh, God, I got like two Clone Legions. You know, this is like.
Divorce!
Oh, please.
Divorce!
This is the worst box ever. And, you know, we never get that feeling. We do like to do Winchester drafts when we have at least six packs. That's a fun two-player format. Four-pack sealed, you know, if we have eight packs. I do like me some sealed as well as draft. And that's really like, basically, Bella is the person I play Magic with the most. I do play on Cockatrice pretty often when she's not around, but when it comes to like paper face-to-face gaming, I would say over 80% of it is with Bella. You know, we do go to the shop, but lately, you know, we haven't been making it out for much except for pre-releases because of my work schedule, having me work during days on the weekends when most of the cool events are going on. I'm going to work, unfortunately, but you know, if it wasn't for her, you know, I wouldn't get to play nearly as much Magic as I do, and I'm thankful that that's a part of our relationship.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we do travel a lot for Magic because judge status.
Judge status.
But at the same time, like, we'll talk Magic on the way down to an event or up, and I think it makes the car rides go by a lot faster until we start arguing about which card is better.
Well, that's why, you know, you just don't play the same kind of decks. Like, Sandy's a junk player, I'm a teamer player, and we try to keep it separate. She stays away from the plains and swamps, and she stays away from the islands and mountains, and we, you know, tend to see eye to eye on stuff, so.
I feel like we could say something similar.
Something similar.
Could you imagine how miserable, like, every time you sit down to play with your significant other, you gotta play, like, a control mirror? You know, or like an aggro mirror.
A while.
Yeah,
we were playing Ravnica. Ugh.
But I was playing. You were playing Esper, and I was playing Bant.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're automatically right because Thrag Tusk. So that's
Thrag
a thing.
Thrag Tusk Resto Progenitor Mimic.
Son. Well, I guess that's gonna wrap it up for this week. Is there any other things that you guys want to mention about how we play Magic together?
No, I think we're good.
Oops.
That covers all of it.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, if you need to contact the show, you can go ahead and hit us up at castofsoulbond@gmail.com. If you want to get a hold of us individually, I guess I'll start on this. I am at the Sid Meister on Twitter. You can catch me on MTG Cast and MTG Bro Deals on the Cast from Exile podcast. We also have a Facebook group. Both the podcast and the Facebook group are not safe for work, and I would not recommend listening to it around children or sensitive people. And if you're trying to get your girlfriend into Magic more by having her listen to this podcast, do not play Cast from Exile afterwards. She may doubt your sexuality. Yeah, so Facebook group, Twitter, that's about it. How do we get a hold of you, Renee?
So if you want to write for Bro Deals, you can contact either me or Trevor at our Gmail accounts, which mine is reithena@gmail.com. You can also grab me on Twitter. I am at @mtgreiunicorn. You can find me on Facebook. I am both in the Cast from Exile group page and the Higher Standards group page. You can find me weekly on Higher Standards as I am the constant. Everyone else drops out on me. We are safe for work over there, and we would be a great place to introduce new players because we talk about some fun decks and simple ways, and we get a lot of good ideas on the Facebook page as to what people are playing and at various levels, not just GP level events. You can catch me most weekends at some sort of event. If you want to see if I'm going to something you're going to, just grab me anywhere and ask me and I will tell you.
Grab you anywhere, huh? But you're a married woman.
Do you mind? Thinking hard on that one. So what about Bella?
Okay, my name is Bella Muse, and you can contact me through my Gmail account at umusebella@gmail. So it's EWEMUSEBELLA@gmail. And I also have a YouTube channel I'm hoping to put up that will be based upon different art in not only video games, but in MTG and what some of my favorite ones. And how can we get a hold of Mr. Trevor over here?
You can contact me at darkr3x@gmail.com. That is also my Twitter. That is also my everything. If you need to contact me, you could probably find me on a website at darkrex.
And you're on the Higher Standards Facebook page, too.
Yeah.
And you can always bug him for judge questions, because he loves answering questions.
I really do. Send me your judge questions.
All right, guys. Well, that's going to do it for Soul Bond this week. Thank you very much, everybody, for joining us. And just remember, if you value your marriage, do not cast a clone legion against your significant other. Bye, guys.
That was...
Behind the Sun.